Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Hello and welcome to the property planner, buyer and professor. I'm joined by my wonderful two co-hosts, as always, Peter Kalizos and Kate Bakos. How are you today, Kate?
Doing really well, but I've got this heater cranking for too long in this room. It's a sauna. I miss you guys in this podcast studio.
Are you in the old studio where we used to record?
Yeah, no, the studio that we'll return to one day soon. Yeah that's the one.
We'll have to actually organise and do a few from in the old studio old time's sake.
Do you guys remember when we did our first like seven segment? So I had grandiose plans of smashing out heaps and then we'd go out for lunch and you were just exhausted and it was like 38 degrees outside and we have no aircon in here.
And I remember some occasions we'd have the people across the road doing work on their jackhammering the concrete.
Only on a Friday, Pete. I just wait for podcasting day.
And how about you, Pete? How have you been?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Dave. Almost finished all my marking, so things will calm down and gear up again later on in July for the new semester. But, yeah, everything's going pretty well.
Yeah, very good. Awesome. Well, I feel like I'm saying this like every second week on the podcast, but like last night Annabelle was,
Oh, my God, mate, what is happening in your household?
Kicked me out of my bed and I was in. I didn't want to get in her bed because, firstly, it's about as long as I am. And then there's going to be coughing germs all over the place. So I'm in bed, jumping Luke's double bed. And so it's not the best night's sleep.
You'll have to do back to back two nights out like last time.
Yeah, I need to. It's just a story of our life.
Good night out. Have a few wines. Don't worry about it.
Need the holiday that's coming up. I think we're not the only ones in Melbourne who are going through that with young kids there.
You'll get amazing resistance. Don't worry about it.
Exactly. All right. So today's episode is on how to tackle cooling markets. It's actually based on some questions from a listener of ours, Olive, but obviously it's very timely with the market cycle we're entering now.
Before we get into today's episode, take a listen to our weekly market update.
For all of those people that are really worried about property prices collapsing, I've just checked the latest CoreLogic data. And if we just look at the two capital cities that are falling at the moment, the big ones, Melbourne, 1.4% it's dropped in the last quarter. Sydney, 2.1% it's dropped in the last quarter. But as we talked on our last show, the state government's looking for first home buyers, give people the option of not paying stamp duty and paying an annual land tax. I'm sure that is going to encourage more first-home buyers into the market because that's 5% less they have to save. And I think that's going to put a bottom on property prices, certainly in Sydney. So, as we said on another show, I think the worst the property market was what has dropped 5.5% in a whole year. So with really low interest rates at the moment, and the most important thing is really low unemployment.
Yeah.
You know, there might be other things that suffer because interest rates have gone up, but the last thing somebody's going to do is stop paying their mortgage. But the reason they would stop paying their mortgage is because they lost their job. Well, that's not going to happen in this market. Like almost any industry, you ask the employers, they're desperate for employees. They just can't find enough people. So for us, that's our saving grace this time around. That's going to put a huge base underneath our property prices.
Pete, this is reminding me of our evening conversations around the dinner table with our 15-year-old. with Ian saying just about every cafe in Yarraville is asking for staff. There's an abundance of jobs out. He's really trying to encourage her to get a job. It would be a great thing. Now, I do have a market update. It's actually about putting in pre-auction offers. Now, we talked about this when the market was running hot. We had to be prepared for a property to go to early auction and to be under contract before the auction date. And it was really hard. I was scrambling all the time to make sure all of the due diligence, the pricing analysis, everything was set, the legal review was done, everything was coordinated, because you'd get that dreaded call on a Wednesday saying, hey, we've just got an acceptable offer, boardroom auction tonight at 6 o'clock. It's different now. And agents are asking us, hey, if you'd like to make an offer, you know, we can put this one away early. That signals that the vendor is a little bit nervous and they'd love to just find the right buyer and do the deal. Not every property, but a lot of properties. And what I will say to people is weigh up the option, weigh up the opportunity. Find out from the agent, well, what's the buy it now price? Because sometimes taking it to auction and testing it will enable you to have a lot more power to negotiate than trying to buy it for a sharp price prior. It's really important that you do test that, because if you just roll over and it sounds like an okay price, you then find out that you're the likely only buyer, you could have more power on auction day. So don't be afraid of auction. And a case in point, I won't name the property. I helped a couple purchase recently though, and we could have purchased the property prior to auction for 2.2, which looked like a pretty fair price. That's where I assessed it. I thought, yep, they've got every reason to expect 2.2 in this market. It's a good property. That's what it's worth. Anyway, I bought it for 2155 at auction.
It's a great little tip and insight in the cooling market, which goes to our theme for today. Sometimes it's actually better to wait until the auction because there's probably less competition. And, you know, anecdotally, I caught up with a friend this morning and he said a property around the corner from them, the owners were hoping to get 3.9. They've already bought. It went to auction on the weekend. It was passed in at 3.5. Now they might have to sell it for even under 3.5 and they've already bought. So the changing of a cycle means different methods of sale and purchasing are relevant to what was actually the best way to go about things only a few months ago. So that's a great one, Kate. My one today is, look, I have a bit of a theory on why inflation is going to take a little longer to come down than normal. Beyond energy shocks, beyond all the overstimulus that governments have done, beyond the fact that people have the greatest savings on record, $250 billion, I think also one of the reasons it could take a little bit longer is that in terms of consumption this time around is it isn't really being commented on, but people won't give up spending and living and making the most of enjoying life and the freedoms of living life as easily as we have in the past, because for the first time in 100 years, we're catching up on the perception of lost life experiences or the reality of lost life experiences. So for most of us, for a fair chunk of the last 2 years, we've been caged. We've been locked up. And so people want to get out and live life. And even though rates are going up, people aren't just going to pull back and say, I'm not going to go on those holidays that I've missed out on. I'm not going to go out for dinner. I'm not going to go out and celebrate and go to events with my friends and family, even with rates going up, because they're catching up. We're all catching up on life we've lost. And I think that's playing a big part as well in what's happening with the inflation. And I think until we feel like the COVID period is far enough in the rear vision mirror, which might only be 6 months away or 9 months away, I think that's going to continue. That's actually one of the reasons I think that's going to slow down this transition to high consumption, which is going to continue to drive inflation.
So you're blaming YOLO.
Blame what?
YOLO.
What's that?
You only live once.
Yes.
Wait till you've got a teenager, Dave.
I'm blaming COVID lockdowns once in 100-year pandemic. Yeah.
We love hearing from our listeners and we'd love to tackle more of your questions. So please, if you have any on your mind, no matter how great or small, send us a message. You can email us info@propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor
or go to our website, Facebook page, or simply click on the link in your podcast app under the play button and fill out our online form.
If we get into today's episode with the questions that we have received from Oliver on how to tackle cooling markets, I'll just read what Oliver has sent to us. Hi, guys. I've got some questions for the pod about how to approach a flat cooling market. What should you do when you are the only one to show up to an auction and or bid? Pete, how do you approach comparables when prices are falling? How do you take advantage of seller FOMO? I also think a whole pod on climate risk, things like BAL levels, flooding, future temperatures in capitals would be good. Keep up the great podcast.
Well, thanks, Oliver. There's like four episodes there. Yeah. Awesome questions.
We'll see what we can cover. I'll start with you, Kate. When you're the only one at the auction, so in terms of addressing that part of his question, what are the risks that our own buyer psychology can create when this happens?
Yeah, so for someone like me who's done their analysis and picked the property, I am so excited if I'm the only one at the auction because I'm not going to second guess myself and wonder what's wrong with it. I've seen enough properties, I know that there's a lot right with it and I've just got lucky. So that's the first thing.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, we've got to fight against.
Know your market. Yeah. So many things come back to this simple fact. Again, we say it often to our listeners. If you know your market and you know your values, then that removes so much trepidation and uncertainty for a buyer.
Yeah.
Dead right. Do your research.
Yeah. So what are the risks? And that's a really good question. The risk is your own head. What's going on in your own mind is your biggest risk. So buyer psychology starts to weigh heavily when we look around and no one else is bidding. We've talked about social proof. We've talked about human bias. They're all kicking into gear when you get to that auction and no one else is there.
Yeah.
And all you need to do is bring your dad or your father-in-law and they're saying, hey, what's wrong with it? Oh, you should give them a low ball and walk away.
Yeah.
They're some of the worst things that you can do. Mm. And most clients that I work with, if we're in this unusual situation, but it sometimes happens, especially in a slowing market or transitioning, when you've had a shock, like a 0.5% rate increase following a 0.25, we don't find it scary or shocking, but it is a shock to the market, in particular to those who aren't familiar with it. So you only need a shock and it can scare people off. And it's like that one I was talking about last week when I mentioned that we bought advantageously and I should have had multiple bidders and I didn't. You can celebrate that when it happens and you've got to ignore the bad white noise in your head saying that there might be something wrong with it. What you also have to do is remember what your comparable sales analysis told you. You know what its value is. Pete's going to talk about how to value a property in a falling market, and you might apply some decreased percentage overlays there to certainly allow for negative market movements so that you're not looking at something that sold in a hotter market 3 months ago and paying the same price. Same as what we do in a rising market. Sometimes if I'm dealing with a property that is selling in a market where I've had 1% increase every month, like we experienced last year, I've got to overlay that. Because if the comps are minus 3 months old, then I've got to put 3 months worth of growth on top of my comparable sale. Same goes, and people detail it. But you have to remember that number that you arrived at and not let your surrounding it. And it happens so often. I get that text, I can hear my phone, or I can feel it buzzing in my pocket and I have a look at it and the buyer says, oh, I don't want to pay 1.6 anymore. Can you downgrade it to 1.5? Well, vendor's reserve hasn't changed. Why don't you just let me do my job? I'll get it on a pass in. I'll go inside and we'll negotiate hard. Because if you miss that pass in, then it's open slather. It's a private sale and then everyone rushes forward and then you've got an auction after the auction. So don't ever underestimate how lucky you are if you've got a chance to go inside and negotiate below the reserve.
Good points. Pete, do you have anything to add or would you like to jump into how do you approach comparables when prices are falling?
Yeah, I think I might just add my little bit there. So yeah. I'm speaking from a valuer's point of view here, okay? Maybe not a realistic point of view because we know that in a hot rising market, if property prices are going up, then something that's comparable should sell for more than something that sold for 3 months ago. But I'm just getting inside the valuer's head and letting you know what's happening. The best option is to use the actual prices of the comparable sales, whether the market is rising or falling. Unlike the share market where prices can increase or decrease in an instant, property prices take a relatively long time. So, for example, last year when property prices were going crazy, if you break it down on a monthly basis, they were going up by less than 2%. And so over a three-month period, and that's about as far back as you should go with comparable sales in a fast-rising or fast-falling market, that makes a total increase of about 6%, which is an acceptable margin of error for a valuer. A valuer can value a property, and if the actual value is plus 10% or minus 10% above or below that, nobody is going to question it. If you go to a court of law, nobody's going to question that. That is an acceptable margin of error. In a falling market, which is what Oliver's question is about, well, if we look at the worst time we had with residential property prices nationally, they dropped a few years ago by 5.5%. If we break it down on a monthly basis, if we extend our period to find comparable sales to 6 months, that's less than 3% difference. So again, an acceptable margin of error. What a valuer is going to do though, in a falling market, like they would have a range. Obviously, I mean, it would be a fluke if all your comparable sales sold for exactly the same price, right? That's probably never going to happen. So in a falling market, they would pick a value in the lower end of the range, and in a rising market, they would pick a value in the higher end of the range. But you can't account for what Kate said, Y-O-L-O, or what Dave was saying, and that is, you know, we've been stuck inside for 2 years. We're not going to miss out on life anymore. So as I said last week, I took my students to an auction on our field trip. I'm happy to give you the address and people can do their own research. It was 12 Neville Avenue, Theberton. Theberton is a bit like Yarraville, really close to the city, full of character homes. It was a property on 600 square metres, fully updated. I had done my research based on comparables. And the record for that suburb was 1.18 million. The comparables were around 1.1. I thought that this was worth a bit less than a comparable because it had one less main room. And I said it was going to go for 1.05. Well, if you listen to last week's podcast, I said that there were 40 other people at the auction other than us. Of course, there were many neighbours, but the property sold for 1.3 million.
Set the suburb record.
Because they were thinking, you only live once. As Kate said,
and, as my teenager says, YOLO.
And Barbara, you know, I've been stuck inside for 2 years. I've saved stacks of money. This is the perfect property. I'm going for it. And it sold for a record price. But if you look at it objectively, it's not the best property that has sold in Theberton in the last 3 or 4 years. But based on what's happened over COVID and people's psychology, that's what it sold for.
And, you know, prices have changed significantly over just the last 12 to 24 months, yeah, let alone, yeah, 3 years ago. So it doesn't have to be the best house to have got the best price during that period of time.
But it did
either
sell in the best market. Yeah.
Yes.
That's what can do it.
And that's why it's worth remembering that when a market's going backwards, historically it's the best time you'll ever get to buy forever moving forward. You know, because very rarely has a market retracted, then run forward again, and then when it's had another retraction, got as low as it was on the previous retraction. That's never happened, mm-hmm, in Australia. So, and the window of opportunity has historically been 3 to 12 months, maybe up to 18 months, you know, in a longer run flattening out period, but they've been very rare in the property market. If we look at the COVID retraction, it was 3 months, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, from March till about May or June, big shock. And then, all right, this is the way it's going to be. I've got Job Seeker, I've got Job Keeper, we've got Home Builder.
Yeah.
Off we go. I can work from home. Off we go.
Sentiment had changed.
Yeah. I had a really fascinating catch up with Industry Buddy this morning. He's pretty into Twitter. I must have written something during 2020 on one of my blogs, and he tweeted it. And lucky I wasn't on Twitter or paying attention to that tweet, because a few people thought I was insane. And it was at the point in my coalface where we felt the market switch, where confidence came back, a willingness to spend was there, interest rates were at record lows. It was just all obvious for me because I was in the trenches. But it pivoted very quickly after that, and I probably should get on Twitter. But the point is, things can change quickly when they've been feeling pretty awful. But Pete, you brought it to everyone's attention just 5 minutes ago when you were talking about pricing, saying, you know, if we look at this over even a 6 month period and we're dealing with a 5% decline, it's still within the tolerances. It's under 3%, which is really insightful. Because in a raging market like last year, and talk to anyone who's worked Canberra, Brisbane, Hobart, they couldn't price the properties accurately. It was moving at such pace. We were having to overlay more than 1% a month, which is very significant. So you're definitely eclipsing your 3% if you're looking at 6 month sales. And what that goes to show is just highlighting the difference between a market that contracts and a market that's surging. The surge is a lot more prominent.
Yeah, it is. And we're not witnessing that just with prices, but it's also with rents. I know with all the properties that we've rented in the last 12 to 18 months and many other investors that I've spoken to, they're getting rents above their asking range. People are just, it's a bit like the fear of missing out because there's hardly any rental properties to go and rent. So they just pay you extra, you know, we'll pay you this much more, or we'll give you 6 months rent in advance. Again, it's that psychology. But that's being driven by a lack of supply, huge lack of supply in the rental market, and that's going to take years to come good again.
Yeah.
The psychology we're talking about here is the fear of paying too much. And the amount of energy and effort that goes into that, people twist themselves in knots over about, am I going to pay too much? When really it's minuscule in the long run for most people. You have to pay more, be willing to pay more than anyone else to buy a property.
You know? Yeah.
And it's a subjective measure. And the end number is a subjective number based on a whole another bunch of subjective numbers, like what's the average value land per square meter? You know, what price do I put on the dwelling? What price do I put on the different parts of the dwelling that ends up coming up with your final subjective figure? It's important to remember that when you're buying a property. And not actually have a conniption.
Yeah, it's
a really
good point.
The property.
When people say to me, well, you know, if they want to have a Dutch auction, I'm not getting involved, or I don't want to pay too much. I say to them, you in a sea of bidders need to be prepared to pay more than everyone else in the crowd. Are you up for it? Because that is the psychology that's required to get to auction.
Yeah.
And there are so many times I'll have a budget, I'll get to auction, and we have some change left over. It's very, very rare that I land on my last bid. It happens occasionally and it's a bit of a buzz, but people do need to get over that psychological barrier.
Yeah.
And, you know, the agents, the auctioneer, they're really cavalier. You know, what's another $1,000? It's a coffee a day, blah, blah, blah. Just ask your parents. They do all of those tricks. But the reality is, unless you pay more than the lender thinks it's worth and you haven't got a workaround, so there's no buffer funds or you can't increase your LVR. If you get caught short with a valuation shortfall and you've got nowhere else to go, you're at risk. You're going to find that money or lose that deposit. That's a horrible, horrible thought. But that's a worst case scenario. And it's very, very rare. And if you've done your homework, it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
So you've got to go into the auction knowing that you have to beat off everyone else if you want to buy it. I think back to Oliver's question, you know, what do you do if you're the only one at the auction? Well, you haven't got social proof, then it's a private sale negotiation inside with a few auction rules attached to it. And I think the hardest thing in a transitioning market with this scenario is when the vendor's expectation is a long way from yours, then what do you do?
Yeah.
And that happens. It's happening at the moment. I've had a couple of pass-ins where I thought, there's no way we're paying that. But you've done all of the work, you've got there, you don't particularly want them to open the floodgates to every other buyer. And what you don't want to happen is for them to get real over the weekend and then sell it for a bargain price on Monday and you miss the opportunity. So you've got to have a peg in the sand where you're prepared to go to under non-bidding negotiations and be prepared to walk away if they're still being silly. Sometimes vendors need time to sort themselves out.
100%. And I'll talk about the boring parts that people don't talk about very often, and that is rolling up your sleeves and getting through as many properties as you can. That is setting up an Excel spreadsheet and tracking sales that are comparable to the type of property you're looking to buy and having a breakdown of what was the makeup of those properties, what was the land size, you know, how many bedrooms, how many bathrooms, garage, et cetera, and, you know, and then looking at the value and tracking them and coming back to it and spending the hours of do your research, as Pete says, do your due diligence. That's the boring stuff that you actually have to do, and it takes hours and hours and sometimes months to feel confident and to buy with confidence. And it can't just happen overnight. It can't happen by shortcutting it. And if you want to overcome any of these types of fears or anxieties, well, it's going to come back down to the amount of work you put in that area for you to feel comfortable and confident.
Really great point. And who said it's boring? It's great.
Some people think it is.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Kate, so you sort of mentioned, what do you do if the vendor's expectation is sky high? Do you want to just delve into that a bit further?
Yeah, I'd love to. If I've got a sense that there's a likelihood the property could pass in, and I always like to be prepared, but in a crazy raging market where I know that there's multiple bidders, probably don't need to be as concerned about my pass in negotiating, more about my bidding. If I think it's going to pass in, I take along my comparable sales. Because usually when you go inside for a pass in, the vendors are up in the bedroom and you're down in the lounge and the agents are racing between, and it's all a little bit awkward, sometimes hostile if it's going on for too long. You don't want it to get hostile. But I need to talk to the agents about where my appraisal is sitting and why. Because they're taking that back to the vendors and they'll be giving me their best, most bright, shining comparable sales, and I'll be giving them the disappointing ones, and we've got to meet somewhere in the middle.
Exactly. Yeah.
And sometimes finding out a bit about the vendor's motivation to sell is really important, because if the agent says, well, they're hoping for a great result, but if they don't get it, they'll just stay or they'll rent it out. Sometimes that's a bluff, and renting out a property when it's all sparkling clean and it's styled and they've spent money on it, that's not really what they want to do. But if they don't have to move and they've, you know, tried an auction and it didn't work, you might be banging your head against a brick wall. If you're worried about being the only one and you think, what have I missed? Have a chat to the agent about the others. You know, what happened with the campaign? Did you have any others on it? What happened to those buyers? Because sometimes that can really put your mind at ease if your mind is racing and you're starting to doubt yourself. And you'd be surprised to learn that many campaigns at the moment either have buyers that are getting jittery and opting out, or they're still chasing finance and they've had their pre-approval on escalation and the lender hasn't made it in time.
Which happens often.
A lot, yeah. So if I know that there were four of us on it, but three have dropped out for good reason, and it's usually bank processing times have blown out, which is rampant, then I know that I've got lucky.
Great points there, Kate. Maybe we should just move to tackling his question on rising sea levels and climate risk. I think that's a
good... This is enormous.
This is huge. So as he said, maybe we could do a whole episode on this, but maybe we'll just...
Let's scratch the surface today.
Yeah, solve climate change and property in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Where can buyers get good information about climate change risks associated with their property in question?
Yeah, well, let's circle in on the risk. Depends on where you are in the nation. If you're unlucky, you'll be worrying about flooding and fire. Welcome to Victoria. But depending on where you are and what the risk is, you need to be prepared to do some legwork and explore it. It can affect your ability to do something with the property. It can affect your insurance premiums. And it can also have a direct effect on some high-level risks, such as being completely flooded out. So you've got to get a keen understanding of what sort of overlays you've got affecting you, what the zoning is, and what council know and what the authorities know about your particular site. So it might be going to your water authority, or it could be going to your town planner and talking about what's on the agenda in terms of potential change. You know, bushfire overlays, they've been upgraded and expanded in Victoria. And all of those things have a run-on impact on what you can do, how you can build, what you can't build, what you need to incorporate in your build. But it's a list a mile long. And if you're thinking of building, this is really, really important. But if you're worried about outgoings, like massive insurance premiums, or worse still, no insurance, do your homework, get onto the insurer and find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in North Queensland, for example, it's almost impossible to insure against cyclones. And if your area's in a big bushfire risk area, South Australia and Victoria and most recently New South Wales is quite prone to, I'm sure your premiums would be quite high. And also if you live in relatively low-lying areas, your insurance would be quite high. Look, it doesn't take much to find out. Contact your insurance broker and say, look, you know, what would my insurance premium be for this property if I wanted to cover for these events?
Yeah. Even just doing an online quote, if you're looking at a property, and I do this all the time, let's say I'm looking at a property for a client and there's what we call a special building overlay. That's not a flood overlay, but it's an indication that the area has an inability to cope as well with high level rainfall and water. So it means that drainage has a real question mark around it, and any new builds have to toe the line in terms of eliminating a heightened risk of being flooded out or having inadequate draining. And SBOs sometimes can indicate that there are, you know, flood issues. It doesn't necessarily go hand in hand though. And so if I'm looking at a property with that particular overlay, I'll find one in the vicinity without that overlay that's very similar, similar orientation, style of house, land size, and I'll do two online quotes with the same excess and the same building insurance value for both of those sites, and I'll compare them. Now, if there's a dramatic differential, I know I've got an issue, because if anyone knows there's an issue, it will be an insurer.
Yeah.
It's not fail-safe, but it's a very good indication before you even run around talking to people.
Yeah, insurers are always the first to know and ahead of the game when there are risks, and history shows that that often broader risks the community have been in the insurance policies for a long time before they've actually become public knowledge.
And people can check it out just by walking around the neighbourhood, especially if you're interested in property development, because if you're in a flood zone, assuming they let you build, it can add a lot extra because you have to build higher than normal. So just walking around the streets, if you see relatively new homes have got relatively high foundations, you can pick, right, well, I'm probably in a flood zone here, so I need to factor in higher than normal footings and foundations. Like, for example, in Adelaide, there are a number of council areas that have flood zones. So the one that I live in, the city of West Torrens, suburbs like Brooklyn Park and Richmond are quite prone to flooding. And depending on the council, they might want you to build above the 1-in-50-year flood. Sometimes it's 1-in-100-year flood. And generally it means you have to build your house 200 mil, 300 mil, maybe even 500 mil higher than normal to get above that particular flood level.
Yeah. And often it'll already be built up that height anyway when you're purchasing it too. So, but look, it comes back to the old property professor quote, do your research and, you know, research those factors before you buy a property. Understand if you're looking at a regular location, which you're likely to be, well, there's probably, you know, you're going to understand this early on because it's going to be pretty common in the area you're looking. So find these things out early on in the property search process. And obviously you still need to clarify when it comes to the individual property as well. So some great little tips there. Without further ado, we might head into our gold nuggets.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Kate, what's your gold nugget?
Well, I want to use Oliver's clever question to formulate my gold nugget because it was a great one. And, you know, our own biopsychology can really ruin things for us. So always keep an eye on the price. It is great to buy a bargain, but it hurts more to lose a great property at a fair price.
Great one, Kate. And just go and read up on cognitive biases and behavioural economics and that'll help.
I love it.
Pete, what's your gold nugget?
Yeah, look, something that I've said before, but comparable sales have come up again when doing your research. So the keys are look for properties in the same suburb, properties on similar size blocks of land, properties where the buildings are of similar size and in similar condition. They are the big ones. And you can look for other minor points. How many bathrooms in particular does it have an ensuite? Size of the living areas, does it have an outdoor living area? But they are the four keys. Location, size of land, size of house, condition of house. That's what a valuer is going to do. And if you're borrowing money, they're the four keys that they will be looking for if you're going for finance.
Great, Pete. Everyone get those four boxes in your Excel spreadsheet when you're tracking incomparables. And add extra if you'd like. All right. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for your input. Hopefully our listeners got a lot again out of that episode. And until next week, happy house hunting.
See you guys
Bye
soon.
Bye for now.
Hi there, it's Anne-Marie from Property Planning Australia here. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about some of the topics discussed, take a listen to the following episodes. Episode 29, Congenial Negotiation Tactics and How to Apply Them in the Right Situation. Episode 94, The Winner's Curse and How to Avoid It. Episode 102, How to Determine Property Market Values by Using Comparable Sales. Episode 107, How to Determine Property Value for Your Home. And Episode 134, Behavioral Economics 101, Tackling the Biases that Impact Our Property and Investment Decisions.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.